do have a take.
Point of contention.
What are y'all talking about? Y'all hate. Stop hating. Stop hating.
Welcome back to Point of Contention, 5 topics, 5 minutes, 5 points of contention. I'm Zach Harper. We got Andrew Schleck producing. Coming up on the show, historic night for Jokic, adjustments for the Heat, CP3's out, trading for a superstar, and NBA draft prediction. Subscribe to the YouTube channel by searching The Athletic NBA Show, or if you're watching this clip, just go click the thing, click our name, and then subscribe. Couldn't be easier. Technology. If you're also looking for something to subscribe to that's free, the bounce. It is our free email newsletter by yours truly and Shams Charania every single morning. Sign up at theathletic.com/thebounce. June 8th, National Best Friend Day. Jay, give an extremely short, brief shout out to your best friend
TJ. You were that dude as a basketball player, but now you stink.
What? Who?
TJ, my best friend.
Okay, why did you call me TJ? Law, give a very short, brief shout out to your best friend.
Got a shout out to my guys, Dwight, Rob, you know, Friend Central Phoenix. We held it down for a couple years and hard work movement forever.
Okay, that was two, but I'll give it to you because you're bailing us out today. Let's get to our two contestants for Point of Contention. This corner, he covers the Celtics, used to be president of the Dylan Brooks fan club, and he awaits the arrival of Cooper Flagg, which I was watching some Cooper Flagg highlights.
Cooper Flagg has arrived. That man has already arrived.
Jay overhypes every white player that's ever existed. Cooper Flagg, you can't overhype him. He's actually really good. It's Jay Sacramento King. Jay, what's your favorite summer snack?
Oh, that's a great question. Summer snack.
I was going to say thank you, but I didn't write this. Chuck wrote it, so I can't take credit for that question.
Summer snack? I feel like I'm an all-year snack type of guy. Like, my snacks in the summer are the same as my snacks.
Okay.
The rest.
So you're not, like, busting out, like, Otter Pops or, you know, watermelon or blueberries or something like that in the summer more than you are different parts of the year?
No. I'll go with Freeze Pops, though. Those Freeze Pops are fire.
Yeah, Otter Pops. Yeah.
The Freeze Pops.
Yeah, Otter Pops.
Yeah, exactly. Freeze Pops.
How long? We could do that for an hour.
I would never stop.
All right. And then in this corner, he covers the Clippers. He's a hooper through and through. Insert Law pun here. It's Law Murray. Law, what's your favorite summer snack?
I'm too damn old for a snack, man.
You're too old for a snack?
I'm too
old. That's when you, snacks that's when are you like, snack the most.
Nah, snacks are like birthdays, man.
What?
Yeah, I don't celebrate snacks like that.
What? Wow. Okay.
You don't celebrate birthdays or snacks?
I mean, celebrate everything, but nah.
But okay. Not specifically because it's that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Would you call it an Otter Pop or a Freeze Pop?
I definitely gotta call it a Freeze Pop. Otters are mammals, so.
What? But the brand is Otter Pop. It's like calling a Band-Aid or tissue Kleenex. Like, Otter Pop is an Otter Pop.
Yeah, I'm not.
I buy a different brand. I don't buy Otter Pop.
Oh, you buy the weak one? You buy the cheap ass one? Sorry for living in luxury and going with the Otter Pop. What's your favorite Otter Pop? What's the best flavor?
I like
it's blue. The answer's blue. All right,
I was just gonna say blue, but I don't like blue for anything. Like, Slush Puppies was never blue; it was always great. But for some reason, with the Freeze Pops, it's the blue joints.
I had some shaved ice the other night, and I did cherry and grape and lychee. Oh my god, man! Shaved ice is where it's at. Law, shaved ice. You gotta be in on this.
Shaved ice is nice. Yeah. It's definitely better than trying to suck syrup out of a classic frozen contraption.
The snow cone.
When you put it that way, freeze pops are really crazy.
Yeah, the snow cone is terrible compared to a shaved ice.
And also,
like, snow cone is so dumb.
When little kids bite into the snow cone.
Oh my God.
It makes me cold, honestly.
Kids,
like, I swear to God,
stupid
I start
and don't
shivering.
Know how to eat. Let's just say it, okay? Kids don't know how to eat, and they're dumb.
I'll co-sign that.
Yeah.
Nah,
that's why we've
kids
evolved.
Are smart. Kids are smart. Kids learn languages. Smart? Kids learn languages with no instruction. They just pick it up. Do you know how hard that is?
If you immersed yourself in a country that didn't speak English, you would pick it up as well.
Nope.
It's just like that. Yes.
No.
Nope. You would. Yeah. Okay.
I did 7 years so of no Spanish one ever
learned,
in high school.
No one ever learned languages in the history of history?
I did 7 years of Spanish in high school, and I could not take Spanish in college.
You were in high school for 7 years?
Well, before college.
We're going to move on to the show. We're gonna
Middle school to
the show.
High school.
No, we're going to move on to the show. That is, we'll add that one to the old intro. Schleck, start the clock. Take one. Nuggets overwhelmed Heat in game three. Last night, the Nuggets beat the Heat 109-94 off a big historic night from Jokic and Murray, the first teammates in NBA Finals history to have 30-point triple-doubles in the same game. Jokic with the first 30-20-10 triple-double in the history of the NBA Finals and the first 30-20-10 game since Shaq in 2004. There are five 30-20-10 games in the history of the NBA. Jokic has three of them. Just an unbelievable dominant performance. Jay, give us your thoughts on the Nuggets and what they did in game three.
It was just an all-time performance from Jokic and Murray. And it was right from the start. It seemed like they decided, okay, you're going to take away the three-point arc, then we will do everything else. And Murray's first three buckets right in the first quarter, while Miami was kind of hot at the beginning, everything was going to the basket. Everything was going to the basket. He said, you're going to take away the three-point line, not really help off that much. Other guys stunt at him. He was like, all right, I'm just going to keep driving it. And I just thought they used their size. They used their physicality. Their defense was fantastic. And Jokic, like, what can you really say about that guy? He has the most impossible touch of all time.
Yeah.
He throws up off balance, one-legged, one-arm nonsense.
And we can't even classify it for a big man. Like, I think you can include all players. Like, I don't remember anybody with this kind of touch.
He has the greatest touch of any man who's ever lived, and it's so stupid. Some of the shots he makes, and you believe in it, you trust in it, obviously, because he does it all the time. But it's like, how does he do that? And if you're a defense, it's like, what are we supposed to do? This dude is taking, like, just off-balance nonsense over the top of good contests. And just, it hits the front rim. It bounces softly off the backboard. It nestles back in. And he was just incredible. But he was incredible on both ends. He was really good. He was yeah, a detriment to the Heat's offense. He grabbed every single rebound. That was an all-time performance from Jokic in a game that they really needed it to reestablish control in the series.
Yeah, Law, I think at one point Jokic had, through three quarters, Jokic had 18 rebounds and the Heat had 24 as a team. Like, it was just dominant.
I mean, but we saw Jokic be great in game two. Like, dude literally scored 41 points and they lost control of that game, especially in the fourth quarter. So for me, what was different was they established Jokic early, but the score was still tied at the end of the first quarter. And then the Heat started disrupting the Nuggets to begin the second quarter with Jokic on the bench. Jokic comes back in, and they're still in that zone, and Jokic found a new toy in Christian Brown. The way that dude, without being a shooter, the one shot he took was a side of the backboard, you know, John. Like, Christian Brown's ability to produce without being a shooter was something that broke Miami a little bit, because in that second quarter, Christian Brown, he gets a cut from Jokic. There's a dunk. Now he's comfortable. Now he feels like he can get to the basket. And then in the second half, that dude is out all of a sudden playing like a completely different player. So it was everybody figuring out that, oh, Miami's just going to like sit here. If you just run through them, they're not going to get stops. And so it was Jokic to start, but more guys figured in. And that was an avalanche that Miami hadn't really been able to deal with. And they didn't deal with it well at all yesterday.
Denver's 3-point defense was good, Jay. Like they actually, it wasn't just, oh, let's see if Miami misses shots. They actually covered the perimeter in an exceptional way. That's more what we saw in the playoff run up until the finals.
Yeah, you could see it was rear view contest from Jamal Murray going over the top of screens with aggression. Bruce Brown flying around screens to contest Gabe Vincent. And they had fewer of the mistakes that they had, especially in the fourth quarter of game two, when they just got really sloppy defensively. They had fewer of those moments and were just much sharper. I want to take it back to the Christian Brown thing for a second, because I thought that was brilliant. And Miami, one of the best things Miami does is that they do an incredible job of making sure that Bam and Jimmy are often the ones guarding your best players, wherever they are in the court, right? But that leaves them susceptible because they have non-defenders at the rim when Bam's guarding Jokic and when Jimmy's concerned with Jamal Murray and Jokic. And Christian Brown has the athleticism, the cutting ability, and I don't know whether it was on him or the coaching staff to just be like, you need to cut and then finish over the smaller guys they have down there, or the Duncan Robinsons, the Kyle Lowrys. I just thought that was a great, great game plan to attack the Heat zone. And Christian Brown, as a rookie, the ability that he showed to finish through contact through those lesser defenders, and in one case through Jimmy Butler, was just really, really impressive.
Yeah, that dude is huge, by the way. He is legitimately 6'6", rocked up, not the longest arms, but incredibly athletic and explosive in his lower body. And that's where he's comfortable. He is comfortable catching, cutting, and finishing through contact and in traffic.
By the way, the Heat had 9 wide open 3-point attempts in that game. Hit 7 of them, so that's good, but not only 9, whereas it's been 15, 16 the previous game. So Denver definitely shored up that defense on the perimeter. Take 2. Adjustments coming for the Heat on the other side. Heat, whew, that offense in the second half, 34% from the field, 28% from 3. We all know Eric Spoelstra, one of the best coaches in the league. I say he's the best coach in the league, one of the best coaches in NBA history. And after 3 games, Law, what adjustments do you think we could see from the Heat going into game 4 to try to tie this thing up?
I think the easier thing is to play better, play harder. I think that is kind of basic, but look at where they lost this game. They got their asses kicked in the paint and on the glass. They basically just had game plan mistakes, the kind of game plan mistakes Michael Malone was talking about after game 2 for his team, but only with Michael Malone's defense, it's why are we allowing these threes? Why are we miscommunicating on the perimeter? Why are we fouling jump shoots? For the Miami Heat, it's Jamal Murray has the ball. Like, why are we letting him get step up threes? And that's your best player, by the way, Jimmy Butler. When Jimmy Butler was attentive defensively in game 2, it took Jamal Murray out of his comfort zones, right? That wasn't really the case most of game 3. And then offensively, I mean, that's where Miami struggled. Like, Miami couldn't put the ball in the basket. And the jump shots is one thing, but they made the same percentage, same volume of shots inside the paint in game 3 that they made outside the paint. So That's not great. You know, it's like, yeah, you can shoot a little bit better, but you gotta make layups. You gotta make those shots in the floater zone. And once again, that's your best players. That's Jimmy Butler and that's Bam Adebayo. You can't have those dudes missing 20 out of 30 shots in the paint. Like, that they're the only ones getting to the paint on that team. If those guys underperform there, you're gonna get clobbered. And then finally, if you look at Eric Spoelstra, the zone works. Mm-hmm. He might have to go to it a little bit more often. You don't want to get the Nuggets comfortable. Like, he didn't zone at all in the first quarter, but like the zone is something that works. What they can't do is they can't have guys like Christian Brown running around and getting lost because, you know, you're just losing track of him. But what you need to do is you need to get the ball out of Jamal Murray's hands. Jokic, you can single cover him. I don't think you can let Jamal Murray like dance and get comfortable, especially if Jimmy's not going to play at the level of consistency that's going to be required to take Jamal Murray out in single coverage. And then finally, dude, these Cody Zellerman's is crazy. Like, if you want to start Kevin Love,
they've got to stop.
You can start Kevin Love. You can have Kevin Love come off the bench too, no.
I think Hollinger tweeted, he asked, is this like a fantasy league where Kevin Love is center ineligible? Like, what's going on here? Like, it's fine. You, like, you're going to get cooked, but at least you don't have fucking Cody Zeller getting cooked. This is nuts.
He was a plus four, man. Cody Zeller.
Yeah, how many minutes, Jay?
I dare you to defend Cody Zeller. I dare you. Go ahead. Let's push the limits you defending white players. Go for it.
There will be no Cody Zeller defense. There should never be a Cody Zeller,
especially
defense.
Not when he's on the floor. There's no Cody Zeller defense. Like, good Lord, man, they got to stop with this. They have to.
Yeah, he doesn't give them much at either end.
I'd rather roll your seven out there. Like, at least he can do something offensively. If you're gonna put a bad big man out there, you might as well not make it Zeller.
Udonis at least get a flagrant foul out of it.
Udonis can maybe
ruffle some feathers.
Can maybe break someone's leg. Who knows? Yeah,
man. Yeah, they. To me, the
also,
difference.
Bam was atrocious last night. Atrocious. Not even
he was bad.
Megan. Every decision was bad.
And they did a great job of taking away the other guys, right? Yeah. And Bam, how he functions, he's not a great scorer 1-on-1. He's not the type of guy who likes to be in that situation or thrives in that situation. They made him try to be a scorer. They made Jimmy Butler try to be a scorer by taking away the open three-pointers. And I thought that was a huge difference, is you make those guys go at you in a stagnant situation, and then you can load up and get help. I thought Jokic's hands were really impactful. Like, he had some steals. He was contesting at the rim. I thought he did a great job. For Miami, the difference between game two and three, the biggest difference was Jamal Murray started getting going. And I thought that just started early. They
Stop
let him
going under screens on Jamal Murray. It drives me insane.
But they let him get easy ones early. And Jamal Murray is the type of guy, if he sees the ball go through the basket a few times, he won't miss for a week or two.
Yeah.
You just can't
let him get a rhythm.
You cannot allow Jamal Murray to get easy ones early, because once he gets hot, it's over. There's nothing you can do. He's shown time and time again that's kind of his thing. Once he gets in a rhythm, he is one of the most unstoppable guards in basketball. You can keep him out of that rhythm sometimes. He doesn't always get to that place. But once he does, it's awful for you. And I thought the Heat just really allowed him some pretty easy ones early. And from there, they were just in a bad spot.
Yeah, the tough thing about Jamal is everything we're going to say about defending him is going to be easier said than done. So you can trap him. If he's going to run around your damn trap and find someone in the dunker spot anyway, yeah, like, mm-hmm. that's going to be demoralizing. But that's the attention that you're going to have to put on. Like, you have to put the ball into MPJ's hands more, KCP's hands more, Aaron Gordon's hands more outside of the paint. What you can't do is you can't have dudes like Christian Brown and Aaron Gordon running full speed transition and getting no resistance until they are pretty much at a dunk.
Yeah, and if you don't score the ball, you can't set up your defense. And that was the whole second half.
I say you got to take away Jamal Murray. It's really hard because he's in every action with Jokic.
You know what? I say it's easier done than said. How about that? No one ever says that. Everyone says it's easier said than done.
I think it's easier
done than said.
And you know why, Christian Brown? Why they were able to even find him against the Heat's active hands? Because Jamal Murray and Jokic are both good passers with a lot of size. And so it makes it easier for them to pass out of double teams than it is for a lot of point guards and centers. And Jokic, like, he's ridiculous. What are you supposed to do against that man? I don't know. There are game plans
what they did
for
in
other
game
people.
Two. What they did in game two. That's the game plan.
Make him score 41. Sure.
Yeah, No, you defend everybody. You defend everybody else because there's nothing you can do. Like, I know Spo tried to poo-poo the whole thing because he didn't want to give away, like, and he didn't want to disrespect, but that's 100% what the, like, Mike Brown said it. Steve Kerr said it on podcast after. Like, that's what you do. It's like, try to take away everybody else. He's not going to score 120 points, yeah. I don't think.
He,
Maybe. He has no holes. He has no holes.
Right,
zero
which is
holes.
Why you go he after everybody else.
He is incredible at every single thing offensively. There is literally nothing he is less than incredible at. It's, I just
cover everybody else. And you know what? Covering everybody else, easier done than said. How about that? All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, CP3 out in Phoenix? And we're back. Take three. CP3 Sunset. It was reported yesterday by Shams Charania that the Phoenix Suns and Chris Paul exploring multiple options, including a trade, stretching his contract, or waiving and re-signing him in free agency. Phoenix expected to discuss trades ahead of Paul's June 28 contract date. He's on the books for 30.8 next season. 15 of that is guaranteed if he does not make it past that June 28 contract date. So, Jay, let's say Chris Paul is waived. Where would you like to see him land?
I'm going to throw out a weird one.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Golden State.
Law, where would you like to see Chris Paul land?
Why not Golden State?
I'd love to see. Stop talking you know what's crazy? What if he went to Boston?
Now that's something we can discuss.
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
I'm going to flip it on
Golden
you.
State?
Why not Golden State? He's not I don't think he's a real starting level point guard anymore.
Does he think that? Does he want to back up Steph Curry? Fuck no, he doesn't want to back up Steph Curry. What are you talking about?
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. I want to see Chris Paul play with Steph Curry. I want to see him running that second unit. He wants a championship, right?
You could say
Law, what do you
say?
He's
addicted to the
championship
after the finals, but them last couple of years,
I thought I had a weird option.
What's your option?
That's dumb. So you know, he brings up the level of competition, the level of execution in the first year everywhere he goes. I want to see him on Orlando. I want to see him take those young guys and make them a playoff team. That team was so good after the first 25 games of the season. Above 500 team after the first 25 games of the season. They need a consistent guard.
They needed a guard, because the way they started season, every single guard on that team was hurt. Cole Anthony was hurt. Markelle Fultz was hurt.
Yeah.
Everybody was unavailable. That's why they started so bad. Also, Paolo had to learn how to, you know, be the guy. So to your point,
But that's a team that needs a veteran point guard.
Do you remember what happened last time he served in that role? He did it perfectly, took the Thunder to the playoffs, and then he's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore.
How long do you think I want Chris Paul in Orlando? He's 50 years old. I'm not talking about
if it happened, I wouldn't hate it
here.
I just think your idea has the same flaw my idea does.
No, it doesn't.
That Chris Paul won't want to do it.
Steph Curry. You just want the one-year honeymoon. That's all you want. But he can't raise the level of where the Golden State Warriors have been. They've been at the top.
They were not at the top last year. They certainly needed someone to run their second unit offense this year.
They needed another dude to yell at Jordan Poole last year.
Someone to join in on punching Jordan Poole? Is that what
we're doing?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
You punch him up top, I'll hit him in the nuts? What are we talking about here? What about everyone's thrown around the idea of Memphis because of the Ja Morant suspension?
And that would be great,
but
because they're going.
It would be great, but also I love Tyus Jones. I want to see Tyus Jones get that law, Murray.
See, they're going to need another player there anyway. And if he went to Memphis, it would definitely help out. I don't know if Taylor Jenkins would let him take mid-range jumpers because, you know, Memphis is they'd be perfect because Memphis ain't ready for the playoffs. And, you know, Chris Paul always drops off after his birthday. So, there would be another fit there. But the Boston idea is just as simple as, you know what, Peyton Pritchard, we'll upgrade your ass too. That's all there is.
Oh, Peyton Pritchard now wants a new opportunity because he didn't play. It's like you might want to go to Europe, China. I don't know, Peyton. I don't know where you think you're going to get that opportunity. I don't think the NBA is the place for that opportunity.
My thing, though, it's fun to talk about where Chris Paul could land.
We all know where he's going, though.
We haven't even discussed the Lakers, which
No, because you brought up the
pretty obvious landing spot. But my thing is, how much does he really have left to give? And I think he can help you as someone who can organize your offense. Yeah. I think he can help you as someone who will bring up the level of your competitiveness day to day and your focus day to day. There haven't been too many people better than Chris Paul at that in the league for the last 20 years. I just don't know if you can rely on him, one, to be healthy in the playoffs, and two, to be good enough in the playoffs to be a starting caliber player, because his size was a detriment even in the best of times. Now he can't move like he used to. Last year, there were parts of the season when he was just really ineffective. And I honestly don't know if he will make a big difference wherever he goes.
Yeah, look.
And that's why the Suns are even considering this, because they need to upgrade the roster around Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And he wasn't good enough as a third guy next to those guys. That's it.
He's 6 feet, 38 years old. And so Chris Paul's probably looking at the next phase of his career. You want to be effective in the playoffs. That means reducing your regular season minutes and workload. And that means possibly coming off the bench so that you can do like what Kyle Lowry is doing right now. Like everybody hits that point. 18 years in, I think Chris Paul, I think he'll see his options and he'll be open to a lot more things than he was even 3 years ago when he was leaving Oklahoma City.
That's way worse than my Kevin Love can help the Heat in this series.
But he did help the Heat in this series.
Exactly.
He did.
Coming up after the break.
Wait for it.
Team most poised to trade for a star?
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, take four. Most poised for a superstar trade on Monday. Our guys, James Edwards III, Fred Katz, and Mike Vorkunov wrote about which teams were best poised to trade for a superstar. Their list included the Thunder at 1, Orlando at 2, Portland at 3, Rockets at 4, and New Orleans at 5. These teams were judged by the young talent and the amount of future draft picks that they own. So, Law, which team do you see pushing all their chips in next year and bringing in a big-time talent?
Yeah, I know James, Fred, Ward, they had this team at number one. But it's obvious for me, it's the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, they're the team with literally a first-team All-NBA performer and an all-star who I think he's 25. Like, he'll be 25 this summer. I mean, Sam Presti loves winning these trades, but he don't really be about that chip. So now you got a guy who he finally plays in April games for the Thunder for the first time in 4 years, right? And I mean, look, I cover the Clippers. I can't tell y'all how many people in shambles over that trade now, you know, just because Shea is good and the Clippers have won like one playoff game in the last 2 years. Like, the Thunder aren't even like a playoff team yet. Maybe Chet Holmgren comes back as a 7-foot rookie out of Gonzaga with a year off and makes a splash. Maybe that happens, but the Thunder need to get serious while they got a guy ready to be great right now. And you need to push the chips in. And even if it's for a guy in Jaylen Brown who can't dribble with his left, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be a little easier if he's playing with Shea and Josh Giddey, right? So the Thunder, this is their time. The West is open enough, And Sam Presti needs to be serious instead of sitting on all these lottery picks like he likes to do.
Jay, who do you think is pushing the chips in?
I don't know if it will be the Thunder, just because they have time to be more patient. They have a super young roster. They haven't even seen Chet Holmgren yet. In some ways, they don't even really know what they have or what they need. So I think New Orleans is obvious to me as a team that has kind of stalled out as a good but far from great team. I would be desperate to add something to that group because Brandon Ingram touched a level at the end of this season where he was incredible. He played at an all-NBA level late in this season. Zion Williamson, who knows what you're going to get from him? He's the biggest X factor in all this because if he plays, he's absolutely unstoppable at the rim. But they have so many draft picks. They have contracts they can use to go after guys. They have good young talent in Trey Murphy, Dyson Daniels, some other guys that could be part of a bigger trade. I just think they're so poised for it. I thought they should have gone super hard after Kevin Durant. And who knows, maybe they did. The Nets offered up a lot. But they are ready for a trade, and they are in a spot where they need to do something. They can't just stay mediocre forever.
The tough thing about New Orleans, besides Zion needing to go into witness protection rest of this summer, probably.
He needs help. He just a different help.
it's gonna be a wild summer for that dude. But like, you got two guys who can't stay on the floor, really. Like, everyone talks about Zion and his struggle there. But this dude, Brandon Ingram, misses a grip of time every single season. It going back to his last year with the Lakers, like, he played 45 games this year. He played 55 the year before that. That's what's challenging. I mean, you don't know what you have in Zion because that dude can't stay on the floor. But, like, your second guy is inconsistent with his durability as well. And so the question is, does Brandon Ingram, is he part of the improvement? Or is he a guy who you're just like, all right, maybe this is the first time in 5 years he'll stay on the floor for something? That's as frustrating as anything related to Zion. And I think that's getting a pass right now.
Yeah, because I think with New Orleans, when everything's healthy, we like what we see, right? Like, Zion is an all-time scoring talent. Ingram is unbelievable.
They were number one in the West
in
December.
Tons of good role players. Yeah.
Yeah, for a while they were.
Like, if healthy, that team is incredible. Law, you know, only so many times you can go, well, if healthy, this team, dot, dot, dot. Like, it's just, that shit gets old. And it's kind of getting old now with New Orleans, especially with the Zion part of the conversation.
Yeah, it got old in a year. Like, a year ago, Everyone was excited about New Orleans. Like,
as you should be, right? Yeah. Like, that's a shitload of talent. That's a great roster, Griffin.
Yeah, like, Zion went from the Bradley Beal honorary get this man out of town award to a dude happy as hell to sign an extension after not playing for a whole year. Like, the vibes were immaculate, and then January happened. The dude hurt his hamstring and never came back, and now things are a whole lot different. Now you're bringing James Borrego on your coaching staff just so that you can feel better about what you're going to do differently next season.
And no matter what they do, as long as they keep Zion, the biggest thing is just getting him to treat everything professionally. Like, stay in shape. Do whatever you can to prevent these injuries. It's obvious he's not putting in enough work because of the way the weight fluctuates, because of how much time a lot of the stuff has lingered. And some of that, obviously, is just bad, bad injury luck. And his body and the torque he puts on his body is just really difficult. But it's pretty clear he hasn't been the most professional player in the league since he got in there.
Yeah.
All right, let's.
And I was just going to say, like, you don't have any of these discussions with Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City is just a bunch of, you know, anonymous dudes. You know, we're semi-anonymous dudes now because they actually played in the play-in. So ESPN got to be like, hey, look, these guys play pretty well here.
Hey,
you
look,
know?
The Thunder have a team.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you ain't got to worry about these dudes. These dudes are in shape for the most part, durable. They play well. They have a little bit more ceiling to reach. You're not worrying about the extra stuff in OKC like you are in New Orleans.
All right, take five. 2, 3, and 4. The NBA draft is only 2 weeks away. The only thing we know for sure, Victor Wembanyama will go first overall to the Spurs. Hornets making their final evaluations through private workouts, considering Brandon Miller, Scoot Henderson, one of the Thompson twins for the second overall pick. It's going to be Brandon Miller. The Blazers are certainly waiting to see what Charlotte does, but there's also a good chance they trade that pick to upgrade their talent. It feels like Scoot and Brandon will go 2 and 3, but who goes fourth to the Rockets is a bit of a mystery. Players like Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, Jairus Walker, all been mocked at that spot, and it's unclear which direction the Rockets will go as they wait on finding out James Harden's free agent decision. But wait a second, doesn't that happen after free agency starts, right? No decisions are made before free agency.
You
no
can't
decisions
talk to are made a free before. Agent before
no,
July
that's
1st.
Not gonna, that's not going to happen. All right, so Jay, who do you have going 2, 3, and 4 in this 2023 NBA draft?
Brandon Miller is going to go 2, Scoot Henderson 3, and then the fun begins because that's where it's like, who knows? I'm going to go with Cam Whitmore. Cam Whitmore. I think people will be able to sell themselves on Cam Whitmore because
I love Cam Whitmore.
I knew you would love Cam Whitmore. You know how I knew that? Because he throws an assist once a month.
Maybe once a month. Maybe. And it's usually I think it's usually an errant pass that gets tipped into the basket. Like that is that's not
the but he's big, he's strong, he's powerful on the drive. Some of his finishes are just ridiculous.
He's a bucket.
He's a bucket. Will he ever pass? Who knows?
Not interested.
I just think it's easy to sell yourself on the huge wing with every physical trait who also has a scoring pedigree. And like those guys are really tough to find because if you can be a leading scorer type, which he has the potential to become, while also being long and strong and with every defensive tool you would want, that's rare. That stuff is rare. Cam Whitmore, I don't love that he doesn't pass. I hate that he doesn't pass.
Oh, my God. Get those passes out of here. We don't need them.
Some of the time, he just makes ridiculous decisions. Just utterly ridiculous decisions.
I honestly don't know what to do with the Thompson brothers. Like, we talked about this a little bit before, but I've watched that overtime. I don't know what I'm watching. I don't know what the competition is. I don't know what the coaching is.
Look at
that stuff.
Greece.
Yeah. More confusing than Giannis and Greece. That's just low level, competition. Like, I don't know what this is. I don't know how it's organized. Like, this isn't like picking a dude from the G League Ignite team.
Yeah. My thing with the Thompsons is one handled the ball a lot more. All-Star was actually the dude winning the MVPs, and people are saying that people like All-Star a little bit more as his draft process is going along, but this is lying season, so we'll find out in 2 weeks properly. But those dudes started next to 2 6-foot dudes. I look at them as fourths, and it's like they literally, if you look at like who their OTE team lined up with, like their center was maybe like 6'7", 6'8", and they started next to 2 6-foot guards, like dudes as tall as me. And you can play with me because I defend up a position, but it's gonna be a lot different, even in summer league for those dudes.
You play with me, you go take the ball out of the basket and give it to me. That's all.
I look at number two. It's like,
and the ball's going into the basket because Zach just allowed his man to score.
Yeah, like
yeah, I'm giving up as much as I'm getting. It's a perfect balance.
Charlotte's interesting in this draft because, first of all, they shouldn't have been as nasty as they were last year. We all know why they were. They were a back-to-back embarrassment in the play-in tournament, but still a play-in tournament. Like, they got to that level at least before the barrel fell out last year. And so you're bringing back a roster that is got to make a restricted free agency decision on PJ Washington, is bringing back some dude that the NBA decided already served a suspension last year. And then you still have Terry Rozier in the contract. You still have Gordon Hayward under contract. So you're picking between Scoot kind of disrupting Terry Rozier, or you're picking between Brandon Miller disrupting Gordon Hayward. I would pick Brad Miller over Scoot. And the reason is this dude, Scoot, I love how rocked up he is, but he's a guard that that would be happy to shoot 30% from three next year. Like, that scares me a little bit. At least with Brandon Miller, I know that dude can probably put the ball in the basket, whether he's on or off the ball. And that leaves Portland with an interesting decision, which my guy Sam Vecini came through and helped me out with an article. And we were gotten to talking, like, if Portland dangles at number three and say a dude like Paul George is available, which I don't think the Clippers want to do that. They opened up a whole new arena. I don't think they're trying to make moves like that. But it's like, would you make that move? Portland is very invested in getting teams to have a market for Scoot possibly being at number three, simply because that excites you a whole lot, hell of a lot more than Brandon Miller. Let's just be real. So that's going to be where the draft is. I don't even care what Houston does. Pick a Thompson twin if you want to. Like, number three is everything for me in this draft.
I think we all agree. Cam Whitmore, that's the guy you go with at two. That's who Charlotte should get. Forget all that.
I would be so nervous to draft Cam Whitmore.
Oh man!
But I'd also be so excited.
Just don't let Brandon Miller play against San Diego State, because we know that doesn't end up well. So if Charlotte has scheduled San Diego State next season, Aztecs are basically.
Are you
going to
bring up San Diego State every single time Brandon Miller comes up?
Yep, 100%. That will do it for this week's Point of Contention. Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe to all the podcasts on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Can I just go off on Dame Lillard for a second?
No. Do it as I'm talking. Warriors plus minus, anything is potable.
Down to dunk,
no dunks, glue guys, Sixers beat, and the bun and cardigan show. What's wrong? I know. Just request a trade or don't, but get over it, right?
Talk about loyalty and then go on some podcast or whatever and answer a question about who you would prefer to go to.
Hypothetical.
You built your entire brand on loyalty. You then took a meeting with LeBron and AD a few years ago, but then came back and was like, you know what? I got that out of my system. I didn't want that. Then you came back and it's like, bro, you cannot continue to claim loyalty when you are going to disloyal places that nobody else ever goes to. You are literally openly answering questions about who you want to play for next season if it's not Portland. That is absurd. I cannot stand for it. I've always respected Damian Lillard. I've always appreciated how he goes about his business.
But
this is such a bad look. It is so outrageous. And I hope he realizes how he comes across. Talking about loyalty for years and years and years. And now doing this. Hey, it is...
Look. Start the petition, Jay.
It is as hypocritical as anything I've ever seen in the league. And I don't even blame him for it, because I would want out too, no matter how much I talked about loyalty.
See how I come back around? It's like, I hate this for me, but I understand.
Are we forgetting he soft launched a trade request last summer too? Why are we forgetting that?
He's just like,
it's going to be a summer tradition until he gets traded or retires, whatever comes first. It's every summer.
It's so annoying. It's so annoying. Answered a question. He's like, Bam's my dog. Bam's your dog. Bam is on a different team. You are under contract. You claim to be loyal, and Bam's my dog. Are you shitting me?
You know the NCAA tournament is over when we get that bullshit, hey, John Calipari might come back to the NBA report, and you know it's summertime when Damian Lillard is talking about, you know, maybe joining another team.
Hey.
There we go. Some traditions.
CJ been waiting for this to happen for months, so if this happens this summer.
By the way, All right. For Jake King, for Lon Murray, for Andrew Schlecht, I'm Zach Harper. See you next time on Point of Contention.